Okay, it's 15 past. I got one English-speaking person telling me that he's watching the lectures, so it's again in English until we manage to drop him out as well. So let's pick up the pace, I guess.
Do I have a screen?
Yeah, I have a screen. So what are we going to do today? Well, we are going to do more applicative functors. Composing applicative functors, I think this is going to be less of a topic than just basically getting more examples of what applicatives are. And last time, I think we made, oh, not that one. Yeah, let's clean up things a bit. Yeah. We played around with random numbers and this writer applicative or functor, which were rather fun to play with. And we noticed that using this chip A thingy, where do I have chip A? Yeah. If I have this type class that allows me to join two structures, so I have F of A's and F of B's, and it somehow produces F of A's and B's for pair AB for me, I can clean up my code quite a lot. And we successfully used this for maybes, random, especially in the random, since this is very error-prone code. We get this nice, you know, nice pattern that we just use this chip to join two random number computations together, and then use fmap to cross those two numbers into some result that we want. And all this bookkeeping code that we had, it's written once here, and we don't have to worry about that. So we don't have to worry about passing the random number generator state from one state to another. And, well, similarly, when we did this, simple, you know, arithmetic training program, bit in the middle, we use this writer and we get kind of rid of all of the nasty stuff, almost. This we got half done. So first thing that we are going to probably have on our agenda is to, you know, fix this. So make this nice again. So what we started with was this thing that had huge where statement with lots of complicated bookkeeping code. Then we applied this fmap and chip pattern from the random numbers to this. And then we kind of lost the actual logs in the process. And now we are going to put the logs back in. That's where we start. Then we are going to see that this chip and fmap pattern, it's going to be rather tedious. So that's something that we are going to get rid of. And then if we have time, we are going to discuss how applicative functors compose. So if I have something that's both the random and the writer at the same time, I can somehow make use of that. But okay, before we go on, any questions? Anything that is troubling you? Anything that you didn't actually get when I said I can spend a few minutes of explaining stuff to you before we go on to the topic? No? Okay, cool. If there is any questions, please join the Slack channel. It's a very nice place and there's already nice amount of discussion there. So it's very beneficial. It makes things much easier. So before we actually go and fix this compute, since the lecture video was a bit late, let's draw a picture about what we are actually doing. So this is an imaginary example problem. We have a this funny web page, which is going to have this text box where people can type arithmetic expressions. And then there is this run button, and it's going to generate the result, which is 12 and list of steps. So you can check your work. I'm not actually freshest in the morning, so Yeah, something like this. So user types in something checks and the program should print out the result. Right. Okay, how do I manage the complicated Haskell code since I can't manage the simple, you know, kindergarten math? Well, anyways, you kind of figure out what I'm doing. So, when you make the program like this, the essential parts, of course, there's huge amount of, you know, doing web coding, HTML, and all that nasty stuff. But the point is that we have a string that we first convert into. This kind of a, you know, data type representation. Usually we have these three structures, and here we have a simple data type that can encode arithmetic expressions by encoding these trees. And then we associate this compute function, which is basically a kind of an evaluator for this tree. So it tells us how to compute this by giving out rules, how to compute if you have multiplication, how to compute if you have addition, how do you have to sleep more. How do you compute when you have, you know, alliteral? Basically, that's what it's doing. And the complication we added there was this extra information. It has to tell us what it's going to be doing. And we got up to the point where we have this chip structure in good use. It gets rid of all of these, you know, nasty bookkeeping stuff, and incidentally it also gets rid of these actual explanations. So let's add these back. And now the guiding principle for working with applicatives in this case, or at least teaching them, is that we don't actually want to open these writer structures or, you know, actually figure out what is going inside here. So we wouldn't like to work with that, because that gives us all the nasty bookkeeping stuff, all the things that, you know, make programming maddening. So we would like to somehow use or reuse this original stuff that we have. So we would like to use zip and fmap and so on. Basically, because if you use zip and fmap, then these are reusable parts. They work for all kinds of structures. And now my problem here. I have this compute function. It's going to produce a writer, so it's going to collect all of these strings that I'm going to output as a side effect. But when I'm computing stuff, it's not actually, you know, it's not producing anything. So I would have to have some kind of an action that I can, you know, add here somehow that writes out the explanation. So to make things composable, it should not be related to this compute function. In the writer thing that I have, let's pick up the definition. Yep, bring that here. It should be written on top of that. That's the only thing that I should be interested in when doing this, adding more text there. And this means that if I manage to make it on top of the writer without knowing anything about the compute, it's going to be reusable, it's going to be nice, and I can use it in all kinds of programs. So, I want to add explanations on top of the writer. So, let's make a few simple functions to do exactly that. Tell, which is, you know, if I have monoid M, it's going to produce a writer that is only going to contain this. Actually, we don't even need the monoid constraint here. So we have some M, and we are going to make a writer that contains that M. So something like this. Very simple. It makes a writer that is only outputting this single message. The output type of the writer, or the data that it's going to contain, in this here, this place. This should contain the stuff that we are actually producing. So this should contain the stuff about the compute, the stuff about, you know, what we are going to be, you know, it's going to be 5 or 6, or the answer is going to be something. And it's going to go there. So in this case, when I'm working just with the writer, I have no idea what is going to go, what is going to be the result of this thing. So I pass in the unit type, basically saying there's no reasonable result. And yeah, let's change the this thing bit. I can actually test my code. Makes me writers like this. So this is a writer action. And of course, if I use this zip function, I can, you know, zip these together. And I call it. And of course, strings are lists, so a string as a monoid is just going to concatenate stuff together. Probably better if I use singleton lists here. So each of these comments is a separate entity. So now it's a list of strings and not a list of characters. Makes it much more readable. So this is a kind of a way that allows me to, you know, add annotations. Few things. So let's use this. So this is a reusable. Tell is something that I can use in any program. It doesn't know anything about my domain. So let's fix this. And this is going to be nasty. We are starting to soon see the limits of this chip interface for making actual programs. So what we are going to do is, well, we are going to do this. This is one part. We chip this part together with the annotation. At this point, let's not be overly concerned about the actual output that we are producing for the user. So, something like this. Now, this whole thing, it's going to be a pair. It's going to be a writer. What's the type actually going to be? Well, you know, luckily we have the compiler to tell us. It's going to be complaining, and the complaination, of course, complaint tells us what's going wrong. Now, what we did is we wanted to use the tell function. We wanted to add, you know, something, some explanation for the current state. So, if we want to combine this tell with whatever, we have to chip it together. So, chipping combines the texts, combines the explanations. Unfortunately, the chip also combines the output of the tell, so we get this int, comma, unit type. Unit type is the output of the tell, and this int is output of the first computation that we have there. And we, of course, don't want that. So, again, code is getting even more and more horrible, but, you know, we can clean it up later. So, let's modify the result and pick out the first of these parts. So we chip something together, then take the first one out. But since the thing that we are doing is we are chipping the writer, it's going to keep, you know, all parts up to this A. So these X's or the annotations are going to be there also. So let's try. So, basically, very silly code, we make a pair, one of the elements of the pair is useless, we throw that away. So, yeah, now it's only going to, you know, give us this, we did a plus. And if I want the whole explanation, I have to, you know, jump through some hoops. Basically, I have this multiplication, which is actually quite easy function to write. We chip together computation of A, computation of B, and then, you know, fmap multiplication inside the pair, so we get the result. And I really, really don't want to be writing code like this ever again, because this is horrible. It has so many parentheses that it's, again, too nasty. So what do we do when we have code that is going to be appearing many times and is nasty? Well, we make an abstraction. So let's call it chip and forget. And what's going to do? Let's just, something like this. Chip and forget. So we have, this is the computation, this first fmap uncary, this part. This is the thing that we actually want. And the rest is just adding this tail. So we can use chip and forget. The first part, this one here, that's the thing that we want. And the second part is the thing that, you know, we want just to execute, just to append the message to the writer. Yeah. Like this. Yeah. So this allows us to compose things that actually have no reasonable result, but somehow affect the log of the writer. Okay, and to work with the actual conventions, chip and forget, it's called less than star. This is the operator, so let's define that. And yeah, we have to give it a different name because the basic library already exports that operator. And it's, we get a type error because it's, read up monomorphism restriction in Haskell, you figure out why the type error occurs here. Yeah, now we can write this thing as which makes this, of course, much more fun. So, now we have this operator. It's actually, you know, when you think how it's going to work, it's going to do this chipping and it's going to do this forgetting and, you know, rather nasty when you think about the semantics. But when you are writing actual code, no, that's very easy. And we can do the same for just to make some kind of an output. So now adding stuff in this system, it's rather easy. We can actually make the logs. The logs are easy to write. We just use this combinator that combines two writer actions. One writer action doesn't really have a sensible result, but it adds the log. Another one has a sensible result, but doesn't really produce the output that we want in the log. Okay. Now, one pattern that we have extracted. Okay, now notice another thing, when we are doing this compute, well, let's fix this. Let's use the explanation. So we have to give names to stuff. So we want to have a better message. Instead of saying we did a plus, we are going to give this nice explanation. And this is going to leave us with one nasty bit that we are going to fix at some point. Namely, I'm going to be computing the result twice. So only way to do this with the current machinery is to, you know, just compute everything twice, so I can get the proper explanation in the code. And this is a fundamental limitation of applicative functors. I mean, if I have chip and fmap, I can't really decide, you know, based on the results. So can't, you know, look into the result of this thing and then decide what to fmap it with. And this is something that I can do with monads, and there's a big difference. But it's more clear to explain it in some other point. So, yeah, now I get, you know, reasonable results. So this is completing this exercise. Again, we have this bit of this extra information that we are going to be using to build this log. And it's not unreasonable code at this point. It's a bit cryptic since we are using this raw fmap, zip, and so on, which are new. But it's neat. It doesn't have that much bookkeeping, really. Only problem is that we can't reuse the results and we compute things twice, but it's easier to write. Okay, that's about this example, and we are going to come back to this, but that's how you would work it. And we learned a new operator. Okay, any questions about this? Just to complete the exercise. Shows you how to, you know, manipulate this a bit. Okay. I don't know. The code is still a bit ugly. Probably there's something that we should do about this, because if you are a working programmer and you encounter lines like this, it's going to, you know, you have to spend like 5 minutes of parsing how this thing actually works. And we are going to fix this. But the way we are going to get to the fix is that we are going to try something else first. So we have this nice chippy thing, and it doesn't look that bad. And now let's see where it breaks down completely, where we can't use this chip interface anymore. So you remember this dice game. Roll 2 die randomly, make the biggest number you can make using those dice. Now, basically, throw 2 dice, you get 5 and a 2, so you get score 52. This thing. So this was actually custom made for this chip interface. This is nice to code using this fmap chip pattern. But suppose that we have a different game. Suppose that we have a game where we roll 3 dice and, you know, take the 2 largest and make the biggest number out of those. This is a simple addition. Roll 3 dice instead of 2 dice. And the code shouldn't actually change all that much, really. It's, you know, ideally you would just, you know, make this calculation in a different way, and that's it. But when we start doing this, how can we actually roll 3 dice? I mean, we have this chip that takes 2 arguments and pairs these 2 arguments. So, well, only way to do this is, you know, do this. So now we have, you know, we first take 2 dice, chip them together, we get a pair, and then we take a new die and chip them together. So what's the type of this expression here? What is the type? Okay, quick question. How on board are you? Is the type apparent? Do you know the type? Hand up if you know the type. Hands up if you are pretty certain that given 15 minutes you will know the type. Okay, I can probably save you the time. So let's figure out. So I have and I'm going to probably go, you know, be questioned as a terrorist for leaving this on the whiteboard. Die, 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 die. So, what do we have here? These are random ints. Okay, if I chip two random ints together. You remember that chip is FA, FB, and gives me F pair of A and B. So this gives me yeah. Okay. This is just obvious. Then this thing here. Now my A is this pair, and B is another int, so this has to be nasty, nasty, nasty stuff. So,
parentheses wrong, I think.
Do I?
I think on the board.
On the board.
There should be not one in front of the SIP, I think.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah. And this one. Yeah. Thanks. So, how do I use that? Well, then I have to change this. This is function here, and probably implement something like convince you that this is the wrong way to write this kind of program. Because, you know, every time I add one argument here, I have these nested applications of chips. And then I have to figure out, you know, how the pairs end up in this result. So this is a horrible code. We don't want that kind of a code. So, you know, this chip thing is, it's not all that it's cut out to be. So we should figure out a better interface for this, a better way of writing stuff like this that is, you know, more readable. Does exactly the same thing as a chip, but we don't want to have this nested chip change. And the idea for this is rather nice, since Haskell is, you know, this is unnatural Haskell. We never, our functions never take these pairs or triples as arguments. So if we just are going to, you know, do this, let's make this change. I mean, this is the Haskell we want to write. We want to take our arguments as you usually take your arguments, and that's it. That's the thing that we want. And then let's see if we can roll with this. So I have a three-argument function. And what is my strategy? The strategy is probably cleanest on the whiteboard. I have this chop. So instead of doing this thing that where I, you know, pair everything up like this, let's do it in a really strange way. So I have this function that takes ints and ints. And this is the sketch of the solution of the problem. So, when I map this over something. If this is F, and I do F map of F to some X, which is some container. Now let's use G for a functor. G of an int. I do this F map. What do I get? Well, I get, I apply this function. Actually, I can parent this here. Apply it to say, for example, maybe int. Can I write this? Suppose x is a maybe int. Can I say f map f x? This is function, weird function like this. This is a maybe an int. Can I apply? Can I do f map f x? Yeah. Okay, what is my result type? What do I get?
It's a maybe int. Is it a maybe int?
No.
It's a function.
Yeah. So we get, let's do maybe is our functor now, so we can work with concrete examples. So I get a maybe. Yeah, obviously. So this function takes an int and returns a thing like this. I use make fmap f maybe int. Well, it gets an internal result, it's going to be this, and this is going to be inside the maybe. So, okay, we can also do it. We have this function. Oh, well, let's fill out that later. Okay, now we have this. Okay. We can apply it like this. We get a maybe that contains a function by f mapping. So, now we have two parameter function. Can be 3-parameter, 4-parameter, whatever. What do we do with this? So turns out that we have this nice operator. That we can apply, called, written like this, as the type we have this kind of a thingy here. So we apply this here. This thing here, it takes some f containing a function, some f containing the parameter for the function, and feeds this parameter into that function inside the structure. So I would write, for example, if this is result 1, it's something like this. Then I would say and this would net me so basically I figure out way of passing parameters in this structure or function that is lying inside the structure. Okay, this has this this bit asymmetrical. So the first parameter is put there by using an fmap. And then after the fmap I use the star. Yes. Other way of doing this is making this function called pure, which is just a to f a. It's also probably the same as so you could write it like this. This is how you could implement it on top of the chip. So basically it takes an A and puts it inside the F. Or in this case I give an int and get a maybe int back. So using this efficient null, maybe I can get well, let's use this. So I don't have to actually pass any parameters. I can just put the function inside a maybe. This is the thinking. I first take this function that I want to apply, these random numbers or maybes or whatever. Then I put it inside the container, just because I can do that. I could also fmap it. Then I get the container containing this function. Then I have this operator that allows me to take an int, put it inside the maybe, and feed it as an argument to this function, which will give me a maybe from ints to ints. Then I have this star. It allows me to take an int, wiggle it in the maybe, and pass it as an argument to a function inside the maybe, giving me a maybe int. And obviously this doesn't really care which gbubble you have. You can implement all of these for any kind of gbubble or applicative. So how do we do this? So this is our strategy. Let's implement this. So I have something that looks like this. Let's use more bit different symbols so we don't confuse ourselves with the existing stuff. And we have some f that is of this chip. So this is the function that we want. This would make it nice and easy. We could use this to feed arguments inside this function inside a functor. And turns out we can implement this rather easily. We have some f of let's call it f fun and f arg. The f is symbolizing this class f. Now, how do we do this? So we have f that contains a function, and then we have a that contains the argument for the function. So I have two f's and I need to merge them. So I use zip. Let's put an underscore there, because this would have a wrong type, and we want to use the compiler what type it actually is. And yeah, probably want to comment out the whole thing. So, by doing this, I'm getting something like this. I have an f that contains a function, and it contains something that is passable as the argument for the function. So, I have to apply this function inside this container. So, I have a pair that is a function and argument, and I have to replace it with the result of the function. So, I'm working with in the f. Inside this f structure, so I have to fmap to modify the things inside there. Now apply, well, apply is a simple function. It takes the pair of f and x and then calls f with x. And now we get this operator. Okay. So what this actually does, it takes a container having a function inside and takes a container having an argument inside, makes a container that contains a pair of function and the argument, and then goes in and crashes this back to the original result. So does this look familiar to you? It's exactly the same as here. So what we actually did is we just picked up this pattern. Yeah, fmap op zip. Except that our op is now function application. So we made this bit of a trick here. So instead of doing this op as a part of this whole thing that crosses things apart, we are going to assume that we have somehow wiggled our function into this structure and then use that. So how do I use this? This original game around function. Yeah, let's convert this into the nicer form. First, we have to implement the viewer as well. So A to FA. This is our way of getting the function inside the container. And yeah, zunit makes a container containing nothing sensible, contains the unit type, and fmap is going to modify the unit type. No. We could even write like this. It takes the unit type and replaces with the A. And that gives us zpur. Did it work? Yeah. And came around, our current victim. So we do this. We throw away this nasty tuppling. We don't want this in our Haskell code. Then we rewrite this. We take the pure op, which is, you know, from two ints into another int. Then we feed it one roll of a die and another roll of a die. And oops. Yeah, it was called zpur. Yeah, still works. Okay, very confusing thing. But now if we go and try to implement the game around three, it's going to be very easy. I take this op, which is three argument function, shuffle it inside random. I can do this for any container. Then I feed it one int from the random die. And I get this hostile sounding but easy to write code. Yeah, again, comments. And again, I have this my own name for this. It's called zpur, since I'm working with zippable. Yeah, this is going to be giving bigger numbers. Okay, that's the general pattern. Things. This is again something that you have to do at least 5 times before you actually figure out how it's going to work. And after the pause, we are going to, you know, draw this thing in a whiteboard again. So taking this as a this thing as an example, showing how the types work. Because looking at this thing through the types is actually the way of, you know, making this easy to understand. Okay, and if you're feeling confused right now, that's the exact feeling that you should have. Now, next up, we are going to have a 15 minutes of break. Let's get cracking with the applicatives. I think this is actually the first really hard part of this course. This star thing here. So if I pick up my code like this, this horrible threat to humanity and sanity, there's like zpur op die, like, feels like an invocation that's probably going to summon devils and do stuff like this. Okay, is this clear? What happens? Is this apparent? Hands up if this is apparent. So, No, not a part.
Slightly, you know, we don't get to show of hands, but one person is scratching the nose, so it's almost there. So, first my own impressions of which part should be difficult here, and please correct me if I'm wrong. I think this chip thing, when we had just chip and fmap and class chippable, this is not really that hard. It requires some thinking, but it's not that hard. In contrast, this thing, even though it's equivalent to the chip thing, we implemented these operators based on those in the chip class. It's the same thing, but this is really cryptic for most people, at least it was for me for, you know, rather long time. So am I correct? Chip is easy, this is weird. Is my assessment correct? Kind of, yeah. Let's go through that again. And the trick here is not to observe how these things are defined. Just observe the types. Because then you get the exactly correct level of abstraction. So we have this expression. I'm using the normal operator here. So this is my expression. And how do I understand it? So first, adding parentheses. It's parenthesized like this. So the parentheses group here, the left. Next up, if we start figuring out what these things are, let's figure out the type. So of is from int to int to int, takes three ints and returns an int. So set pure of. What this thing does, it just is going to take this function and put it inside my chippable container or applicable functor, whichever you like to call it. So in this case, we have a random it inside the random. Don't worry about how it does that. That's an entirely different problem. You don't need this to think about the whole thing. Then, next step. This part. Okay, the die here, yeah, it's a random int. Right. Just a random int. And what the star does, takes a container containing a function, takes a container containing argument for the function, and applies it. So these two cancel each other out. Leaves me with, you know, function that only takes two ints and returns one. Obviously because the parentheses are placed here, the first argument gets eaten away, you get this. Then this part adds a random int again. So this here, that's going to cancel the first part here. We get random containing function from int to int, and finally the last part we get, surprise surprise, random int. See, not that bad. Each of these invocations has this one parameter inside this function that is random. Yeah. No worries there. And basically when you are implementing these operators, it's totally different problem. It's just you are given a type and then you write implementation for a function of that type. You usually don't have to think much at all. These are easy to implement if you just get this weird function with a weird type, and then you just write the function. And usually the implementation basically writes itself, so it's easy to write. And basically look at the types. Only look at the types, and this is really easy. At least after you've done it for 5 or 6 times. So let's see how to use that. And to do this, we use the function setViewer and this applicative star, and pick up all of these things that we have written, like this game round. Yeah, works like this, very easy to write. This game round, yeah, 2 arguments, works easily. This one, well, that's easy again. But let's do it differently. So, it turns out that, yeah, if I have fmap there, then it already consumes one of these arguments. You can either do fmap and then give one argument to fmap and then apply feed the other one using this star operator, or you can write setViewer op and feed the arguments like this. Both are the same. Of course, this means that, you know, if this is the same as the fmap thing, it means that I can also implement functor interface using the zipable interface. So if I have this zipA class, I can, you know, implement fmap on base of that. And this is rather easy. Well, the container is... Yeah, let's call it FA, and this is fun. So how do I do this? Pure fun applied to FA. So if I have stuff that allows me to do chip A, like random or maybe or whatever, I can make each of these into functors. So what does it mean then when I have this functor arrow or this functor constraint here? It means that whenever I have chip A, I also have a functor. So I don't need the functor F to implement anything using this chip A, but if I have chip A, I can always implement functor as a side effect of having chip A. And this constraint is there only to signify this important part. If I have these operations, I can derive fmap out of these operations. And having the constraint forces me actually to write that code. And this results in better libraries since I have all these nice instances. So, okay, next up, the laws. All good type classes have some kind of laws to help you work with them. And for example, in this case of chip A, maybe I could implement this like this. And this is valid implementation. It compiles. I can actually prove to you that it. And yeah, remember. Sorry about that. Typo somewhere else in the code. Yeah, this is valid implementation of this function. So why? How do you choose how to implement, for example, this path? And that is what the type class laws are all about. So even though this seems a reasonable choice, then what happens if I have my fmap defined on top of these chip operations, like add one into
yeah, G, not an F map. So that breaks. So I have to have some rules of what I can use as implementation of these. And turns out the rules are very easy in this case. So first question, this formulating the rules is less easy than understanding them. Do you know what is an isomorphism? Two things are isomorphic, what does it mean? Okay, deep silence, so I take it as a no. Well, you know what it means, but I don't want to explain it. So, if I have triple ABC, it's isomorphic to, let's say, let's take an example, you say this nasty, you know, pair of pairs thing that we had earlier. These are isomorphic. Isomorphic means that I have a function that, you know, converts this thing into that thing on the right. And another function that, given the thing on the right, it gives me back the thing on the left. So it doesn't really matter which of these datums I have. I can always convert back and forth without no loss of information. I don't lose anything from going from triple into this pair of pairs. They're both the same. And similarly, I have, these are different Haskell types, but the contents are different. I can always write a function to losslessly convert one to another. And things that have this property that I can always convert back and forth, they are isomorphic. That's the layman's definition of this. So let's denote isomorphism as this tilde operator here. So what are the functor laws? And this is why I showed you the chip A class instead of the applicative class in the prelude, because the laws are very easy. The laws are exactly the laws of a monoid. They are the same laws as a monoid, except that I'm working with a bit different categories. You have to squint a bit to see them. First law, if I chip any A and Z unit, that's the same as taking the A and F mapping the unit there. Might need a bit of squinting. So the Z unit is the left and the right identity. It's the M empty of a monoid, the same thing. And okay, does this F-map thing need any clarification? Basically, it takes whatever is in the A. I have this, let's put type here. So this F-map, what does it do? I have F of A, and it turns into this. That's the type. So it means that zipping and F-mapping and Z-unit have to behave like this easy. Then, this is the M empty law of a monoid. Then I have the associativity. And this is where I need the isomorphism. So I can chip these in any order I like. And only thing that is allowed to change is the structure of the pair I have. So these are the laws that I need, and these are the laws that guarantee that all of these implementations will behave sensibly. Those are nice to work with. It gives me the proper F-map and all these things. For example, this Z-unit, if it's nothing, then the first law is going to fail. So these are the guidelines that allow me to pick up the correct implementations. Okay, please, are these clear? Clear enough? Okay, if they are not, ask me on the Slack and I make another video, another example or something of this. So, okay, then we have a natural pause in the flow of things. This is applicative functors on point of view of this chip A construction, which gives us nice and understandable laws. Whereas in the original, if I go and see the documentation of Haskell basic libraries and see what the applicative is about, I don't have the zip and zunit. Instead, I have pure and the star. So I don't bother with the zip and unit, I just implement this pure and I can implement this star directly. So differences here. So you really want to use this one, but the laws are the laws here. These laws I still need a cup of coffee to clarify to myself what these actually mean. And turns out that they actually mean those three laws there. So make sure that these work and you get a nice thing. Okay, at this point, any questions? Any worries? Are you feeling threatened by this die thing or anything else? Because this should feel a bit awkward, and you need to do a few exercises before this clarifies in your mind. Are we on enough safe ground that we can actually go to the next topic? Can you do the exercises based on this? You manage. Confidence level. Raise your hand if you are, would bet at least 10 euros that you can complete the exercise, at least 3 exercises for next week. Yeah, sure, I'm not going to bet you on this. So probably should. If I was richer, I could make more students pass my courses. Okay, let's pick up a completely new topic. So we had this web page of checking how computations work, the first example. So let's do something similar. That is a very useful technique. Languages and automata, the course given by Antti-Juhani Kaijanaho. Have you taken that? Automatic Eliopit. Yeah, so mostly that course is about parsing things. So this is the concretization of that course. Let's make a parser. Parser is a thing that converts a string into a data structure. And our example problem is like this. We have a string that contains a pair of numbers. And we want to somehow convert this into actual Haskell pair with Haskell numbers. So we have a string which we want to convert into. This is our example problem. The problem is so small because I'm going to run out of time even with that. So basically in our arithmetic example, it would be reading arithmetic expressions and converting them into a funny data type. But let's do the tuple here. Okay. Everyone clear what is going to happen? And instead of writing this single one function that converts this exact tuple into this from the string, I'm going to make a framework that allows you to write any kind of parser you ever want. So let's get hacking. And of course, everything is going to be applicatives. First question, what is a parser? So if you give me a string, can I always return you a tuple of ints based on that string? Well, if the string says a cat or a dog or foo or three x's, I'm not going to make, I can't make two ints out of that. Or if I make two ints, they are probably going to be very arbitrary and not the ints that you want. So a parser, it's again a bit like random. Parser is a thing that allows me to extract A from a string. And it's actually a function from string into the A and the leftover string. Except that it might fail. Maybe I can't parse a string. Exactly the same structure as the random example, except that we have this possibility of failure. You clone a maybe at that point. Okay, then we have run parser, actually executing the parser, which is takes a parser, a string, and returns me the A. actually, to make debugging easier, I'm going to return the remainder of the string as well.
Question.
Yes.
So are you implementing in a way that it parses the first occurrence because there is the leftover string, or what do you mean with the leftover?
Will become clear in just a few minutes. So I have pass B string and So let's make the first pass, and this will explain the question for you. So idea is that I'm going to compose passes. I'm going to make simple passes and use the applicative thing, the chip 18, to make them bigger and bigger and bigger. So first parser I'm going to be writing is open parenthesis. This is going to be a parser. What's the result that's going to return to me? Okay, let's not do this because it doesn't have all the bits that I want. Let's a digit, a single number. That's easier. It's a parser int. And how does it work? It's a parser where p is the function shown above. P takes a string. If it's going to get an empty string, then the result is going to be nothing. I can't get an int or digit from an empty string. If it gets a non-empty string, then we have this function isDigit. This is from data.ord. This is already defined. It determines if a character is a digit, a number, that is. If the first thing in the string that we are parsing is a number, then we return, we just, read the number, convert it into a number using the read function. A read function is nice. It converts, strings to, simple strings to anything. Or we could make this ASCII arithmetic or whatever. And then we return the excess. I called B. Let's fix it here. And then I want to and this needs also the maybe. So if I want to pass one digit out of this string, I get number one and the leftover string. So I think this answers to your question how this behaves. Let's make open parenthesis. Well, open parenthesis, I don't really need to return any value. I want to just check if it's open parenthesis, meaning I want to pass strings to start with. And if I have something that starts with open parenthesis and something at the end, then I can get open parenthesis. Well, it doesn't work. Now it works. Doesn't return any sensible information. Now, these are parsers. So you could probably imagine that I could implement a really, complex parser. Just make a parser and then write this function p and do many things and do big parsers that would pass the whole expression that I'm doing. So I could write this is the problem that I'm trying to solve. So I could conceivably do something like this, and then write lots of code on part where it says undefined. Instead, since I have this applicative thing, I can actually start combining these smaller parsers into bigger parsers. So a digitable is, you could conceivably do it like this. First you run the parser for open parentheses, then you take the leftover string, this thing here, and then you run the digit parser on top of that. So to make a complete example, it will work like this. Open parentheses, a digit, and so on. So I could put these, one after another. So let's do exactly that. So basically, this is the action of the zip function. So if I make my parser zippable, just like I did with the random, this is almost the same example, by the way. If I make this zunit thing, of course, that's just a parser that always returns the unit and empty string. Compare this to the random function, it's the same, it's completely the same. I have to put the just inside. And then the zip. First, when you implement this, always write the type. Otherwise, it's going to be nasty. Now I have to write a new parser. And like before, this is going to contain all my boilerplate code. And how do I do this? Well, it's some parser P where the P is a function which first runs the first parser on the input. And if the first parser fails, then I can't make the pair. So the result is nothing. First result and leftover string. Well, then I can do this. Then I'm gonna run the second parser on the leftover string, and if that gives me a nothing, well, I can't make the pair because I have the B and I have to return nothing. And if it gives me result and more leftover string, I can just return the pair R and R2 and leftover 2. Okay, nothing to it. When writing this the first time, it probably is going to take you half an hour, but you can, it's something that you can manage if you can manage to make yourself sit down for a long enough time. So it's not that difficult. So, zip for parsers. Let's see how many errors I have. Oh, yeah. Where did I use this? Most difficult part about programming: remembering what you call things. And also, yeah, since I have this limitation that I have to also have functor instance when I have zip A instance, well, that's not that difficult actually to implement. I already did this. I have this thing that converts this zip A into a function, same function. And then I can get cracking with this. I can make, for example, this whole thing using these. Open parenthesis and a digit. Yeah, need a comma also. Another parser. Of course, this is horrible, right? Absolutely horrible. And oh, yeah, doesn't even work. And yeah. And obviously, when you are really doing this, you probably are not going to copy paste things. Maybe it's the same code. I would just parameterize this, but since I'm running out of time so badly, I will do it like this. Yeah. Okay, you could do it like this. You have these very, very small parts that are very, very easy to, you know, actually apply, or actually write. And then you can just use this zip chain to compose these together. And as a result, you get this tuple. Almost what we want. And well, then we look at this. This thing, it's isomorphic to a normal tuple. There's this units. Well, you can always invent units. So one value, there's two instants. Yeah, it's isomorphic to a pair. So, yeah. But this is what this chip thing is going to always net us. So we can better do it like this. We take some function. Some function which we are going to lift using the set viewer, and then that's easier. It's just a chain of things. You don't have to worry about nesting and or anything. So what it gives me is I have to, you know, supply a function that takes a unit, an int, a unit, an int, and unit, and it returns an A. And if I can write function like that, I have completed my example. And yeah, don't need that. That's my first parameter, then I don't need the second one, third parameter, and final parenthesis, yeah, like this. So just throw away all the unnecessary stuff. Okay, please help me. What did I do wrong?
Se on se leftover string,
joka
vie
sieltä. Sehän ei ole mukana tuossa lambdassa. So the question was, why the lambda doesn't have the leftover string? The leftover string is not part of the parser result. It's, if you look at the definition of the parser, everything that I'm operating with is the A. It's the part A. And this ZBur and relatedly FMAP, they are going to see only the A. and this string is never visible to them. So I don't have to worry about the leftover string when writing these parsers. But yeah, if I make infinite recursion, it's going to make a very bad example. So I called fmap here, and then I define fmap using zfmap, which is using we have to break the recursion somehow, so let's do it here. It's so just implementing this fmap by hand. Just wrote what should end up there. So yeah. Now it gives me the result. And the leftover, when I run the parser, then I get access to the leftover. Oh, then what else do I have? Well, I have this zip and forget. This is a nice thing. It's a very nice thing. Because I can actually use that here. For example, let's make another version of this. I can go in and actually start using this one. Using this zipping and forgetting. So now wait. Probably having problems with associativity. Yeah. Just checking for. So my problem is that I have to tell how the parentheses go around these operators that I've defined. So these are left associated with priority 4. And I'm basically cheating and checking what the real priorities are. So I should be able to, after this write, open parenthesis a digit, which would automatically throw away the open parenthesis. Then I keep the digit and pass the comma, still an int, and so on. So I could use these kinds of tricks to make my life easier. Get rid of the dummy parameters. Okay. So here we go. So well, that wasn't so bad, right? I can chain these things together. So let's think of another thing. If I want to change my problem a little bit, if I want to also pass pairs with question marks. So this would some data that might or might not have the values. So just an example. I could pass either that, or then I could pass something with the question mark inside. And that would give me just something, and question mark would be nothing. So this gives me another point where I have to, you know, figure out how to do these things. Because parsers are, naturally you can write this funny parser, or parser combinator, called or else. Which takes two parsers, which return the same thing, and then tries the first one. If that fails, tries the second one and uses that. So this would be another way of combining two parsers together. Parsing this or that, or like we did before, parsing this and that. So it would be something like this. At this point, typing these is just an exercise of, you know, typing things. So let's take the original working version, or something simpler. Let's do this. I don't have the question mark as a parser yet, so I could write. No, let's make it even more easier. So if I want to pass a open parenthesis or a comma, I could do this or else pattern, and it would, you know, work for both of those and not for anything else. So let's have this work. Yeah. The P1 is the thing that passes a tuple. I could silly example, but since I'm running out of time, I could write a parser that parses either this pair explain why I had to write that in a minute. It either passes a pair or it passes a comma. You could reasonably think that it passes either a pair or a triple or, you know, quadruple or any other sensible parser. Trick is that I have to take the result of the comma and turn it into a pair, so that both of the parsers are of the same type. Or I could do something like this. Since the parsers are functors, I can change the result of the functor, so I can use this fmap to throw it inside of an either, for example. It's very flexible now. Okay, here's third thing that is applicable functor, and well, turns out that this or else thing, it has a name. There's a class called alternative, which gives a name less than bar greater than. This is my or else. Also requires to have an empty. And yeah, alternative basically does exactly this. It picks up from, you know, give it two functors, then it chooses one of them based on some logic. With parsers, it chooses the one that is succeeding on that string. And maybe it chooses the one that isn't nothing. And yeah, this thing again. Where do I have the laws? Should have laws here. Yeah. Here are the... No? Well, the laws are again monoid laws. This operator must be associative, like the operator in a monoid. And the empty, well, it has to be identity for this operator, like M empty in a monoid. So all things monoids, same laws as applicatives, same laws as alternatives. All of these are, you know, exactly the same thing, different, you know, views of the same thing. This parses are a monoid through the or else part, for example. Okay, I think this is enough of parsers, and I have less than 2 minutes left. Confidence levels again. The last exercise in the course, or in this week, is you have to parse this configuration file. The idea is make use of these parsers. Confidence level. Are you likely to succeed in doing this? More than 50%, you estimate that it's 50-50. You have at least 50% chance of being able to complete this exercise. Raise your hand. 50% chance. Okay. 10% chance. Yeah. So most of you are going to be able to, you know, likely to complete it. And, well, it's a star exercise, so it's supposed to be a bit difficult. But it's not that difficult to do. So even if it's the last exercise, the star, it's going to take a lot of time. It's, I think, something that is beneficial for you to try. So even if you are not going to truly complete it, at least try. You get one of, you know, you get one mark for doing that. So it's nice. Okay, any questions?
The lecture goes online. I don't think the first one was.
Yeah, I will put it, and hopefully I get a terminal recording of this. Tried it now 3 times and has failed twice. So third time's a charm, so I'm confident I get it. Okay, again, this should feel difficult. It is difficult for the first time. So you have to just, you know, stick with it. It would be too easy to quit and think that it's too hard. It's not that hard. It just takes a little bit of time to get your, you know, brain in correct configuration for understanding these things. So if it feels hard, then just, you know, do more. And soon it won't be that hard. Okay. No questions. If there are questions that are come to mind after the lecture, go to the Slack channel and ask there. There has been very nice discussions there already, so please join. Okay, and that's it for me.